6 months ago, Jewish worshippers in Pittsburgh were the target of the deadliest anti-Semitic attack on American soil. In the days after the Tree of Life shooting, Pittsburghers seized onto a phrase that both inspired and described the community's response, stronger than hate. As 90.5 WESA's Liz Reed reports, putting that maxim into practice would require a big shift in how we think about human nature.
It was used by politicians like Mayor Bill Peduto the day after the shooting on the Today Show.
I hope that everyone does understand that Pittsburgh is stronger than hate.
Celebrities like Michael Keaton standing in the rain at Point State Park.
If you want to see a city that's far, far much stronger than hate, you should go to Pittsburgh.
Students like Catherine Fleischer at the University of Pittsburgh's Stronger Than Hate rally.
We are Pitt, and together we truly are stronger than hate.
The alleged shooter has been charged with hate crimes, which the FBI describes as motivated by a bias against someone's race, religion, gender, or other protected factor. But Pitt sociologist Kathleen Blee says that animus is often an expression of fear.
It's a fear rooted in a sense of vulnerability.
Blee has spent much of her career studying white supremacist groups, including the Ku Klux Klan.
It's important to say that the vulnerability in general is not actually true, but it's a perceived vulnerability.
One way that fear manifests is the conspiracy theory of white genocide, embraced by neo-Nazis, white nationalists, and others. The theory holds that white people are being replaced by immigrants and people of color. And Blee says that message can be appealing to someone who is feeling vulnerable, like their life isn't going well.
It's sort of, here's why it's not, because there are these forces that are targeting you, that are making your life difficult. And it's given a sense of urgency. And when it becomes very urgent, that's where you have the terrible potential for violent outbursts.
At the corner of Shady and Wilkins Avenues in Squirrel Hill, beyond a chain-link fence, behind a glass window, 11 white paper stars of David bear the names of the shooting victims.
This place is yet another reminder of where this ideology ends up.
Tony McAleer of Vancouver is a co-founder of the group Life After Hate. He visited Tree of Life when he was in Pittsburgh earlier this year for a panel discussion on hate crimes. As he looked at the makeshift memorial, he recalled his trip to Auschwitz last summer.
It doesn't end with Tree of Life. It can go much further.
McAleer once believed the same ideology that fueled the October attack. He says deep down, the emotion that motivated him to become a neo-Nazi wasn't hate or even fear. It was shame.
Well, I'm not talking about healthy shame where you feel the flush in the cheeks or guilt. Guilt is like, I did wrong. Toxic shame is, I am wrong. I felt less than myself, and so I adopted an ideology that told me I was greater than.
McAleer points to childhood trauma as being at the root of his shame, and his experience is not an isolated one. The National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism found that childhood trauma is a risk factor for becoming involved in an extremist group. Researchers note that the vast majority of people who experience childhood trauma will not become violent extremists. But for those who do, extremist groups can provide stability.
I got a sense of belonging. I got acceptance when I felt unlovable. I got attention when I felt invisible. And I got power when I felt powerless.
McAleer says his identity as a white supremacist began to unravel when his first child was born. Becoming a father, he says, he felt loved for the first time in a long time. He now works with people leaving white supremacist groups, and he says the key to that work is compassion.
Compassion is the antidote to shame. When we're compassionate with someone, what we actually do is we hold the mirror up to them and allow them to see their humanity, their wholeness, reflected back at them when they can't see it or perceive it on their own.
McAleer's work is done on an individual scale, one white supremacist at a time. But those who study childhood trauma advocate for a broader public health approach, says Dr. Sandra Bloom, a psychiatrist and public health professor at Drexel University.
We know that childhood adversity increases, and dramatically in many cases increases, the risks for basically all of our major social problems. Mental health, health care, substance abuse, criminal justice, you name it.
Bloom's work is informed by the findings of a landmark 1998 study from Kaiser Permanente and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. The policy implications could be monumental, says Bloom, because many of these adverse childhood experiences are preventable.
This is a big shift. This means really rethinking how we understand human nature.
Bloom and others say a person's trauma doesn't absolve them of responsibility for their actions, but addressing trauma could go a long way toward avoiding future problems.
How you doing? So good to see you. I'm getting my hug, huh?
The Reverend Paul Abernathy is full of positive energy. He greets people on the street, is generous with I Love Yous, and offers brief, impromptu counseling sessions to neighbors outside the Center Avenue storefront that's home to his church, St. Moses the Black Orthodox Christian Mission.
It's all of us together, and you know we've got to love each other.
Abernathy sits on the board of the Campaign for Trauma-Informed Policy and Practice alongside Bloom and leads Focus Pittsburgh, a trauma-informed community development group. The group runs a free medical and behavioral health clinic, offers career training, and hosts community dinners.
There's a saying that comes from the trauma-informed movement, you don't have to be a therapist to be therapeutic. Each and every one of us can explore how we are a therapeutic presence in the lives of others.
Trauma perpetuates itself, says Abernathy, in families, in communities, in societies. His work is focused on interrupting the cycle of trauma with love.
It's not even about being stronger than hate. It is more even the power of love, the power of unconditional and redeeming love that we, each and every one of us, have to be committed to.
It's something Pittsburghers seem to know instinctively in the days following the attack on Tree of Life Synagogue, as they radiated love, compassion, and neighborliness. But translating these feelings into public policy is a challenge, says Bloom. There are lots of efforts to help people deal with trauma that's already happened, like the work Tony McAleer does to bring people out of white supremacist groups, or to try to prevent trauma among at-risk communities, like what Focus Pittsburgh is doing.
What we're trying to figure out is what are universal precautions around the issue of trauma.
That's the crux of a public health approach. Prevention aimed at the entire population. For example, when it was proven that vaccines could prevent serious illnesses, vaccination became a normal part of healthcare. But what's the vaccination campaign of a trauma-informed society? That's what governments and public agencies need to figure out. The task is daunting, Bloom says, but doable.
We could stop what we do. We could decide as a species we are not going to engage in violence anymore because the price is too high.
I'm Liz Reed, 90.5 WESA News.